right. Well, hello and good afternoon. Welcome to round two of the economic session. Thank you all for coming back. What I'm going to be talking about today is sort of a continuation of a project that started talking about last year. Just taking a look at the progress and condition data that come out on a weekly basis throughout much of the growing season. Trying to take a look at how we might be able to use those to help predict yield and form production models. So ultimate goal here is really to get a better handle on production, how we can model it. Of course, production is simply product of yield times acres. Focusing here on the yield part of the question, more specifically, we're focusing on yield planted as opposed to yield harvested. We're trying to model it as a function of the time trend. Time trend would capture things like seed technologies, improvements in production practices. And then beyond that, we're taking a look at, once again, those weekly progress and condition data. Since these data come out every week, it's something that gets a fair amount of attention in the discussions about production. But I think there was a lot of questions in terms of how we should talk about this in relation to discussions in production. And a goal of this project is really to take a better look at that. There's not a lot out there in the literature to give us guidance in terms of how condition especially relates back to yield and therefore production. Really briefly, for some background, if you're not familiar, crop progress numbers come out on a weekly basis during the growing season. They're focused on five different stages of production, and they talk about the percentage of planted acres on a state basis and also a national level that has either been planted, reached squaring stage, bolls set, bolls open, or finally harvested. For condition readings, just some background on those, five condition ratings, once again, coming out every week, from very poor up through excellent. When you take a look at the window of when these numbers come out, it's a little bit more limited relative to those for progress, only occurring between weeks 23 to 39. To translate that back into the calendar, it's roughly between June and late October. So you take a look at these data, they're a little bit complex. We've got five moving parts coming out on a weekly basis across a lot of different geographies. You want to take a look at them visually, you can see spaghetti soup for our progress, and you've got, you know, a messy cloud of data here in our area chart for crop condition. Here I'm showing you figures at the national level for 2019. So once again, these data come out on a weekly basis. How are you going to process these to take a look at what it means potentially for production? So that's the goal of the project. You can take a look at, you know, maybe say we're seeing more excellent, more good than we did last year, but what does that actually mean in terms of bales potentially? So we're trying to model this. One way that you can frequently take a look at these condition numbers, it can be aggregated. When I talk about aggregated, you can take a look at the percentage being either good plus excellent or the percentage being poor plus very poor. Compare that on a weekly basis. Compare that on an annual basis. How are we doing better than a year before? So should we aggregate it? Should we disaggregate it? Also, should we take a look at this on a linear basis? Should we just model it straight up in terms of the percentages? Or should we reward excellent and punish very poor by potentially squaring those two extreme readings? And then finally, when we take a look at progress, how do you compare progress relative to where we've been in the past? So a lot of questions out there that we're trying to answer. We're doing this on an aggressive basis, and essentially we're going to run a ton of regressions, starting with taking a look at some of the more basic elements of our model. We'll take a look at the time trend that we want. Once again, we're modeling technology there. Do we do that on a linear versus long log time trend? When we compare that against yield, we find that linear did a slightly better job. We're taking a look at this over 21 different geographies for all the states, with the exception of a few of the smaller ones. We do have condition data, so the smaller ones, they drop out. We also aggregated across regions. That's something that's not published, but we did that on our own. And then we did this for 17 weeks that are available. So this may sound a little bit like data mining, testing all this, but the thing is we're not really redefining the theoretical model. We're still having a function of time trend, progress, condition, and maybe a little bit more weather data as we get deeper into this. And we're really trying to explore best fit. We want to get an idea about how we can use this to help predict yield. And we can take a look at some of our model level statistics to get an idea about what may be doing the best job. So we had started out with spaghetti soup. We ended up with some spaghetti soup. We ran 18 specifications in terms of different models for each dependent variable. In this case, we're just focused on yield planted and previous efforts to yield harvest and also abandonment. We did that for each of our 20-plus geographies, and we also did that for every single week. Currently, one dependent variable of focus, two condition specifications. Are we going to aggregate or not aggregate? three functional forms. We take a look at condition. Are we going to do it on a linear basis? Are we going to log it? Or are we going to square the extremes? And then we take a look at our progress variables. We also modeled those in three different ways. We took a look at simple difference from the mean over the 30 years that we have this data from. We took a look at the percentage point behind the mean, and then we also took a look at a squared difference relative to the mean. So I think we were pretty successful in terms of creating as much regression output as we started with data input. Some findings that we were able to glean from this massive amount of output that came out of these models is that progress and condition do generally do better than the time trend. Of course, that's something that you would help. You're explaining weather conditions over time. Also, when you take a look at these data over the seasons, you can see that the prediction gets better over time. You would expect that because there's less uncertainty. You've already experienced more weather, meaning there's less weather to come down the pipe to mess up your yield expectations. Something else you take a look at, progress was not a very strong predictor. Condition did a little bit better. Condition variables tend to be more significant. So if you take a look at the coefficient part of the output, a little bit more predictive when they're aggregated. This is because you have less collinearity. Probably not a big surprise there either. Then something that was maybe a little bit interesting is that when you take a look at the predictive power of condition variables, you tend to see only one side being significant, either being good or excellent or poor or very poor, but not both sides at once. So that's good. The model is telling us something. And that's essentially where we were last year. Something that's more newer this year is actually take this and try and weaponize it, take a look at what actually can tell us. In terms of finally getting to, you know, what can we take a look at with this progress and condition data relative to our yield expectations. So what I've got here is just yield forecast. So I took the results from all these regressions that we ran. I took an average of what they would expect. So if we take the OLS coefficients, put the data through there, run it through for every single week, get the predictions, and then we can start comparing them to see where things come up. So these are essentially forecasts for yield issued at different points in time. We can compare this against the USDA final yield estimates for yield planted. Fortunately, my numbers are a little bit further back in history, don't show up so well, but essentially take a look at these three final figures. You can see that we over-predicted on each of the past three seasons. It doesn't look so good in terms of our predictive ability, but if we take a look at some of the inter-season predictivity, we do see that it lines up pretty well with the USDA estimates that come out on a monthly basis between June and October. So this is for 2017-2018. You can see it does describe movement and it does follow the track that the USDA predicted as well. Here you take a look at 2018. Things are pretty flat. You see that things got a little wacky there at the end where the models started predicting an increase where we ended up with a decrease in yield in those last few weeks. And then here, if you want to take a look at 2019-2020, you can see it also follows the track and did capture some of the downturn in yield that occurred late in the season. So unfortunately, we're not getting much in terms of predictive. We're not able to predict where the USDA number might be going, but at least we do know that it does line up pretty well with what the USDA is eventually is saying essentially at the same time. So once again, condition and progress can tell us something, and I think there is some use for that. Internally, we sometimes get questions about what production is going to be at a given state at a given point in time. We don't get those state-level numbers from NAS until August, so if we take a look at the time period early in the summer, we can help answer some of those questions by using some of these models. Something else that we've added to the situation this year, once again, taking a look at yield, we want to try to add more weather information to it. Something that I've been working on, particularly this year, was integrating NAS data straight through to GIS systems. So essentially, we've got basic core data related to production and yield. We've got the county level. We've got ag district level. We also got a state level. Other attributes we pull from that, of course, acres planted, acres harvested. So that's just stuff we get straight from NAS. Using those NAS numbers, we also can derive abandonment. So you want to take a look at abandonment, where it's occurred over the past 10 or so years. You can see, essentially, if I flip back and forth here between acres planted and acres abandonment, you can see the abandonment occurs about everywhere, and of course, as we all know, it's concentrated in West Texas. Here, just to give you an idea about 2018, also you can highlight how it's not just West Texas. You want to take a look at the effect of Hurricane Michael. You can see the impact it had on abandonment there in southern Georgia last year. But when you take a look at some of the predictive factors we wanted to focus on, one of them was the drought monitor. I think all of you guys are familiar with this type of data. Key feature that we had, since we have this NAS data and GIS, we can pull this drought monitor data also into GIS. If you're not familiar with what some of the things you can do, but when it's in there, if you have that drought monitor data, essentially you have a drought monitor data rolled out like a cookie dough, and you can cookie cutter it with the county level boundaries. And then we can take an average of the drought monitor reading for each county, and that, of course, gives us a way to start taking a look at how we potentially could predict abandonment given drought readings at different points in time. Now, this is all kind of preliminary in terms of the regression that we want to run on this. But here, just taking a look at a particular county in Texas. This is Cochran County. Unfortunately, the label didn't make it on there. I picked it because it was a county that had a decent amount of acreage and also had a relatively high level of abandonment historically. So I was modeling annual abandonment percent versus the percent of the rating of drought monitors different points in the season, just to get an idea about, you know, when we might be able to experience some predictivity. How early in the season can we say that we may see acres be abandoned? And with this, we can see that if we do have readings as early as June or July, we do have some strength of predictability there. So this is, once again, just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we want to do in terms of modeling. I know there's some serious collinearity issues going on here, but we're going towards forecasting predictability here. An R-squared of 81% with a sample of just 20 years isn't too bad. So as we expect to be at pretty decent predictability here, I think this will improve as time goes on. And this will be something else we'll feed into our yield slash production model as we get further down the line. Instead of just doing a forecasting yield per planted acre, we can transition more towards yield per harvested acre by including a forecast for abandonment using some of that drought monitor data along the road. So that's what I've got. Question? Yep. Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Was there any difference in the accuracy of the prediction based on the state that the data was collected?
Well, you get better readings, but there's more variability. So it's always sunny in California. You don't see a lot of variation in their condition readings, so you get less predictability out there as opposed to other states where you do have more change. We didn't look at it with the goal of examining the data. I just want to see what we can do the data to tell us what it means for production. So, there is certainly a difference in the strength of predictability. My read on it primarily is there variability or not? Not yet. This is as far as I got. I would like to say this is as far as I got last night. This is actually as far as I got this morning. So, something else I'm thinking about this too. So, collinearity, I was thinking more about the drought monitor reading. So, if you're in a drought in June, you're probably going to be in a drought in July. But a challenge we got here too is that the number of observations isn't huge. Drought monitor data is only go back to 2000, so we've only got 20 years of data. But we could address that by taking a panel type approach. So we get more observations, but we need to figure out how to break that out so we don't have clustering. We're not saying so if you want differentiation across your different panel sets. So we need to figure out how to delineate the panels, the sets that go into the panel. We haven't gotten there yet, so the goal of talking about this here is to get suggestions. So that'd be a great one. It's just figure out all the ways we can model it. And I'd say an added on factor for this too, and we've got some of our fiber quality people here as well, is that feeding this in not only for yield but also for effects on fiber quality. So we've got all drought monitor readings for all cotton counties. Something I didn't point out is we're differentiating here. We really only want to focus on cotton counties. Other counties, I'm sure they're great, but we don't really care about them as much here. But taking a look at, you know, what happens with drought over time. What does that mean not only for yield but also for different quality fiber quality aspects? So part of the motivation for this was to address that same question. So there's a lot of times you hear people talk about progress and condition. I don't like it. I don't trust it. I don't know what it's telling me. Is it telling me anything? Here we can say, yes, it is telling us something. It does better in the time trend. It does line up pretty good with, you know, what the USDA says. It's not necessarily telling us ahead of time, but it does at least line up with what they're saying. So when you model it, it seems like it's doing okay. I don't think there's a strong reason to complain. It is giving us some information.
I think that's some of the complaints. I remember last year, I think during corn, the crop condition said something, but then that month mass said something very different from how everybody interpreted the crop condition.
Yeah, you hear that all the time. So yeah. I didn't know if you had that variability and complaint from the cotton side.
I mean, of course, they haven't heard it. Doesn't mean it's not there.
I think
it's there, but it's just... you know, you got to average it out too. I mean, you're gonna have funky years. Like, I mean, we got like this one, and that's a funky. So these are coefficients that are derived over the past 30 years. Maybe something this year is a little bit different. I haven't had a chance to dig in to see exactly what's driving that separation, but it's not perfect, but it's statistics. So, and it is telling us something.